the devil's advocates.
I got a little email missive just a little bit ago. Can I share just a little?
Please.
Friend, Trump is one day away from taking the stage in Wisconsin, and we need you to help stop big tech from censoring his American First message. By taking our Trump rally poll, can we count on your prompt response? Here are your options. Yes, I stand with Trump, or no, I support censorship. You know, let's just say you feel a little pushed in the corner.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Hour 2 of the Paperwork Crimes Wednesday edition. We are joined right now by a fine guest. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, welcome back to the show. Fortunately, it hasn't been too long since we saw you last, Jim.
It has not been. Another day when lawyers take center stage in the news of America.
Well, it can't be a good day for America then. But let me ask you, this latest filing from the Department of Justice, you know, I know you were up late night reading it, texting it, trying to inform dumb guys like us. Something big's happening here. The DOJ sort of went out of their way to make a public rebuttal of Donald Trump. Hell, I would say they almost made a criminal case against Donald Trump in public. What was your interpretation of this filing?
They really did. I join you in that assessment, Mike. This was a situation where Donald Trump had filed a lawsuit to do one simple thing, presumably. That was to get the judge to appoint a special master to look at all these documents that the FBI had seized, apparently not trusting the Department of Justice. Department of Justice had previously said in the affidavit, no, we've got that. The judge had approved it, the magistrate judge. That process had gone ahead. All the department needed to do today was to say, you know what? We've done this already. Work is already accomplished. Nothing to do here, judge. We oppose the special master. Nothing for that person to do. That would probably have taken maybe a page with the signature lines. To your point, what they did instead is they added an additional 36 or 37 pages, all but indicting the president for this conduct. And from my perspective, preparing the United States of America for that time when Merrick Garland does, in fact, return before a grand jury an indictment against the former president.
Jim, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. It certainly felt that way, perhaps 1,000 words and at least 3 criminal charges. It seemed like the criminality was laid out visually for the American people. Did you share that in interpretation, Jim? We didn't see the contents, but we saw the cover letters.
Right, we sure did. And we saw two or three very important visual things. One, of course, is the photograph itself. If you choose not to read all 36, 37, 38 pages of it, the picture is probably on the front covers of every single newspaper across the country today. It shows the criminality. The picture is the crime, if you will, as some people have said. It shows the random, haphazard, scattered way in which highly sensitive documents were handled at Mar-a-Lago and plainly near the president's own desk, the things he was working on at the time. And beyond that, then, the other stunning thing coming out of this affidavit is the letter from the attorneys back in the summertime saying, nothing to see here. We've given you everything pursuant to the subpoena. Do not come into the search warrant. We know now that as a result of the search warrant, the FBI acquired two times as many documents as they ever had before. Those lawyers are in some big jeopardy themselves today.
Jim, there is an article, a column at the Washington Post today that that puts forth the theory that Donald Trump used to travel around with a big stack of thousands of pages, everything from top secret documents to newspaper articles to whatever the luncheon menu was going to be today on Air Force One. And he'd carry around these stacks of paper, and it was sort of a dual reason. He wanted to feel important. You know, he wanted to look busy. Well, the president's got all this stuff to work on Air Force One. It's being suggested that perhaps he's sort of a hoarder, and he took big stacks of this stuff back to the Mar-a-Lago resorts. Jim, if that were the case, if there's no actual espionage, he's not selling secrets, but he's just this disorganized hoarder sort, would that somehow diminish the crimes alleged and documented by the photographs in the DOJ's very thorough filing?
I'm taking my leave from Don, who's already shaking his head, I can see. And so I'm going to go with that alternative theory, which has two problems with that. One is, go back to the photograph. On those red cover pages, anybody who's worked in government, when I was U.S. attorney, I saw this fairly routinely when I was in Iraq all the time. Screaming at you at the top of its colorful lungs. This is sensitive material. This is classified. You cannot take it away from your desk without putting it in a safe for 10 minutes. That's how serious this is. That's number one. Number two, if indeed this was just purely completely random, and gosh, I forgot what I've got with me, then you've got to respond to it back in January completely. Oh, by the way, you've got to respond to a grand jury subpoena over the summertime, in which once again, there's a request for this material. And finally, when you don't do it, your lawyers are pretty much stuck. They're saying, oops, I guess we kept some additional stuff here. That's when this goes from pure negligence and pure inadvertence to a criminal conduct situation.
So I'm going to put you down for paperwork crimes, Counselor.
Right. I'm just on this side of that category, Mike. That's where I'll go.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, Jim. Thanks for coming around once again. Attachment F. That was the last page that I saw. I actually did read it, and it's quite stunning. And I just want to go start from the beginning, Jim. His attorneys, sat on their ass for a couple of weeks, or were, bumbling around, did not do anything really afterwards. And then he filed this request for a special master. But it wasn't in the proper jurisdiction. It was under a different judge or something, Jim. And my understanding is, because it was not, they had to, the DOJ had the opportunity to enlighten the new judge as to the circumstances that the old judge was already aware of, and that gave them the opportunity to do this 38-page indictment of Donald Trump. Do I have that right? Is this because his lawyers screwed up?
Yeah, I think you can say that they screwed up in two ways. One is, as you said on Monday, again, this is the calamitous clown car of Donald Trump's lawyers, as you say, getting the judge wrong, getting the filings wrong, invoking improper statutes. These are the kinds of things that maybe wonderful real estate lawyers would do, but not in a criminal setting. So they get it wrong initially. The government plainly sees its opportunity here to not only educate in the wake of those fairly bungling missteps, the judge gives them another opportunity. And then the Department of Justice does something else. And this is why it sort of signaled, as you say, in the attachment there. The Department of Justice goes back and says, we'd like permission, judge, to go beyond the page limit for our response to this. And the judge very quickly grants that. That should have been a strong indication to everybody that, whoa, there's something else coming here, not just in the wake of the negligence and the mishandling and the bad, incompetent behavior of the lawyers, but also we got a whole lot more. We are going to walk through this door now, and we're going to, strategically take advantage of the stupidity of these lawyers in filing the lawsuit in the first place, getting it wrong procedurally, and advocating for a special master when there was no need to do it at all.
Jim, the Department of Justice made a specific request to do extra credit before the court?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In all these rules, there is, and every single time you file something, there's a page limit because judges got tired of all of us lawyers writing too much and saying too much. Imagine that, right? And so you've got limits, and there are situations where if you overdo the page limit, courts will bounce it back and say, sorry, can't do that. And so you can get permission under appropriate circumstances to extend that page limit. The judge very promptly said, sure, go ahead. Tell me what more you want me to know about. And that's exactly what the government did here, again, signaling exactly what we got, which is, as you said at the top of the hour here, this is almost a talking indictment now of Donald Trump. Plainly, Merrick Garland preparing us for what is about to come.
James, obstruction. I mean, this is Donald Trump. If he was the hoarder in chief, he had every opportunity, every ample opportunity to make it right. And he declined to do so multiple times. And then apparently at some point, took stuff out, intermixed it with other things. They found some of this stuff in the drawer of his personal desk with his passports. One of the reasons those were swept up in this is because they're in the same drawer as some top secret materials, Jim. Let me ask you this. I know Crudy likes to brush this aside and compare it to the lack of the peaceful transfer of power, Trump's insurrection, and that whole thing. Now, my understanding,
a much more substantial crime, I would allege, but
maybe as it stands right now. But we have multiple grand juries, multiple investigations going on. It's not the same people in all these different spots, although it's all under the DOJ. So I guess my question is, Jim, if guys like me and understand how Trump's psyche is, I believe he took these for a reason. He took them and did this for a reason. He obstructed justice for a reason because he finds value in the documents that he ultimately kept. At what point in an investigation like this would the DOJ have to start looking at, did he do anything with these documents? One thing to have them. How does the Department of Justice make the next logical step in my mind to say, well, what's our exposure here? I know the DNI is doing something, but how does the DOJ do that?
Right. And much like the DNI, again, pursuing this investigation of just what the harm has been. You got it just right, Dom, that there is separate, a part of the government, if you will, figuring out what things were compromised, what things could have been compromised out there. Inside the Department of Justice, there's a thing called the National Security Division. It's certainly pursuing the same kinds of things and asking those questions. Okay, he's got these documents. They're scattered around the floor on the colorful carpeting there. They're next to his passport, which suggests, again, these are things he's looking at. What kinds of possibilities could there be? And then it goes to the issue of intent, which we've talked about before, right? It wasn't just gathering these things up. What was he doing with them? Why were they scattered on the floor? Why are they on his desk? And that's what the department will also be looking to. And presumably going back to some of those same people who provided the probable cause for the affidavit and asking them, what was he doing with this stuff?
Well, Jim, I would just say quickly, I think my impression was that those were put on the floor and they took pictures to present it. That's my impression. I don't know if that's sure. The case or not, but that seems to be staged for the purposes of this, looking and see there. The little measurement thing was there.
Sure, right, absolutely. But the point is that even on in that photograph, as they've described in the accompanying affidavits, the supporting memorandums, they found them in various locations. They were not simply in this room. They were scattered about with his personal materials, other things that were not classified, just presidential records, all of that scattered notion. They're not just sitting in boxes somewhere. He's using them for some purpose. And my sense is that photograph reflects that.
Come back with us and our fine guest, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. You're listening to The Devil's Advocate.
From what I've heard, you're using your paper not for writing, but for rolling doobies.
Was that wrong? Should I not have done that?
Suddenly, my quarterback is the number one trending topic. Why, you might ask, is Aaron Rodgers trending on Twitter? He's out this game. He's got COVID-19. And to my perception, he freaking lied to us, man. I'm very frustrated that he is not eligible to play this Sunday, especially when you find out your quarterback is a half a Trumpster. And he claims, I'm not a flat earther, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just play one in the NFL. That pisses me off, man. I was going to bet on that team. Maybe. New time, 3 to 6 p.m. And Dom.
You took the first step and quit smoking. But even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
President Trump lost the election. Joe Biden won the election.
Collectively, Republicans got 1.661 million votes. 51,000 more votes than Trump got.
He exhausted his cases. He exhausted the court challenges.
All the Republicans voted for Trump the way they voted for the assembly candidates. He would have won.
It was not rigged. It was not stolen. Donald Trump lost the election. Joe Biden won the election. It's really clear.
This message was paid for by the People for People People Corporation. Donate online at p4ppc.org.
The Devil's Advocates.
Aaron Mostovsky, who rioted at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, was dressed as Captain Caveman. QAnon shaman meets Law and Order?
Right. I mean, he pulled it off a whole lot better than Aaron Mostovsky.
Well, let me read a quote from the judge in this case. I hope you'll leave some of this fantasy world behind. Mostovsky was sentenced to 8 months in prison.
Looking at the guy, he might be one who loses his mattress on the first day. Breaking news.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Pardon?
Getting lost in a city you always wanted to visit.
Pardon, madame. Pardon? S'il vous plaît. Je cherche un restaurant. Merci.
Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed.
This is so cool.
Get the latest info about COVID-19 vaccines at getvaccineanswers.org. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Douglas LaFollette, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Good to be here, Mike. Across the country, in most every state, the Secretary of State is the person who is in charge of the election. And we've seen lots of hanky-panky in Florida back during the Al Gore elections, in Ohio and Georgia and Arizona and Michigan.
We appreciate you coming around, sir.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around at least for one more segment. Jim, so with these documents, again, I didn't quite hear. I want to pin you down on this. What would have to happen for the DOJ to inquire further about why, and does it matter, why Donald Trump had these and what he did with them? What does that look like?
Right. It does. And as you just got just right again, Dom, there's undeniably a grand jury that's looking at. They're the ones who issued the subpoena over the summertime asking for these documents. It is, we don't know whether people testified before the grand jury. It's entirely possible that some of the people who are represented in all that redacted stuff in the affidavit, they may have also appeared there. And so to the extent that the Department of Justice is looking for a motive and intent here, which they necessarily need to do, is if we do in fact proceed with this prosecution, yes, it's a crime to do this. You also need to tell a jury why it is. What was the motivation of the defendant to do this? So they've got to come up with a theory, and it's got to be premised upon facts and information that would come from a lot of the people who saw these documents as they're being moved around Mar-a-Lago. That would come from people who saw the former president with them. We also know that there are some surveillance tapes out there. I don't know exactly where those are, if they were exterior, interior. Presumably, they showed a lot of interior things as well. So you look at that, too. But your point is the all-important one, which is, in addition to charging what are plainly more than just technical, with all due respect, Mike, more than just the paper violations, you do need to tell a jury that this was not simply negligence, that there was a purpose behind it. Whether or not he actually consummated some engagement with a foreign power, compromised, that's different. It's a slightly different issue. If you still have the intent to do something with them, that's what you need to tell a jury about. And you'd get that through the testimony of grand jury, people appearing from the grand jury, and presumably maybe even some of the notations, some of the other personal records and notes that maybe the president or others made about these things. All that could be and should be a part of the department's inquiry right now.
Jim, let me ask you to timing. We got midterm elections in approximately 90 days, and the Department of Justice doesn't like to seem political in their timing. So if you drop this within, 60 days, an indictment against the former president of the midterms, there's going to be all sorts of squeals of politics. The guy's endorsed half the candidates in America, more or less. So, A, this timing factor in, Jim, and B, back to my theory, or at least someone else's theory, maybe it's just a hoarder. Maybe he just took this paperwork back. And certainly we know, because I saw the photos, you saw the photos, Jim, he's guilty. We know he's guilty. But are these the sort of crimes that a former president's going to go to prison for? And if not, aren't there bigger fish to fry, Jim? Don't we have the whole insurrection issue and the you know, guilt of the former president in that regard? To me, that's the more significant crime for history to judge this former president by, not whether or not he took paperwork of top secret veracity back to Mar-a-Lago.
Sure. Let's take that second point first, and that is that Merrick Garland is almost surely gathering around his conference table there on the seventh floor the leaders of the various investigations. Can we count them using Arabic numerals anymore? There are so many of them going on right now. And so he brings them together and he says, where are you? Where are you on January 6th? Where are you with other matters, electors? Where are you with all these other things now, including the Mar-a-Lago documents? And at some point, he has got to make the decision, depending upon where those investigations are, about timing. You're absolutely right about that. And you want to, if you will, you want to always put together the case that is as strong as possible. It is sort of flippant to say if you're going to kill the king, you need to kill the king. But it's got to be a very strong case, that virtually jury-proof and compelling. And so when the general practice with the Department of Justice is you indict, you present charges when the case is ready to go, we usually present things to the grand jury when we've got evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. Here, the Attorney General has a lot of decision-making to do, because it may well be that he's going to have that beyond a reasonable doubt evidence as to the Mar-a-Lago documents soon. Does he wait until the January 6th components, other things are ready to go? That's a strategic decision he also needs to make, just because of what you identified. You can indict an individual on multiple different times, different charges. You don't just have to indict in one singular indictment. He could do that and charge down the road, but he's also got to be very much aware, which I think is where your question comes from, the notion you're doing this very much in the public domain. As for the election, yes, tick tock. There is an unwritten sort of 60-day rule inside the Department of Justice. You don't get inside that unless once you get, you've got a really compelling reason to do so. You've got to stop somebody from doing their engaging in their further criminal activity. That may well be in the mix here. And so I would not be completely shocked if there is some charge here, but it's also got to be taken from the perspective of the long view. My best guess is we won't see anything before the November midterms, but sometime in early 2023, yes.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, about less than 2 minutes here. You know who's not on in that meeting on the seventh floor is Fani Willis or Tish James or Alvin Bragg. And we have all these other things. Is there any coordination between those different law or you know, agencies, let's call them, as it pertains to charging the same person?
Sure. Two kinds of coordination. One is it certainly is not only acceptable, but assumed that even state authorities will talk to federal authorities simply to give them heads up. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to indict. I'm going to charge tomorrow so that we're not stepping on each other. We're not executing search warrants on top of each other. Pure communication among leaders that can and should happen and does happen routinely. The other piece of this, of course, is that those are separate charges. And they could go at any time. Again, Fani Willis on Fulton County, she could drop something much sooner. She doesn't have perhaps the global concerns that we just talked about that Merrick Garland does. And again, as you said, you've also got New York. You've got the Attorney General there, the DA in Manhattan. They also have things pending. Those could drop at any time.
Jim Santel, you got one more segment, man. You got time for one more.
Yeah. Always.
Because Dom has kind of been dominating this conversation as far as I'm concerned. And I got a few questions, sir. Our good friend and fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Happier Happy Hour. It rolls on with a little more Jim. Let's call it extra credit coverage.
Very good.
Just say- inappropriate. Stop it right now.
The Devil's Advocates.
Jake from Milwaukee, you get the last word this hour.
Okay, well, Trump is totally innocent. But it's obvious that George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, BLM, with Antifa, and then Hillary's emails, with Hunter Biden's laptop, gas, high, Afghanistan, cut and run. I rest my case, Truth.
What about Benghazi, Jake? You forgot Benghazi.
I forgot Benghazi. I'm sorry. And Benghazi, I rest my case.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Relative to population, I believe Waukesha County is running like twice the mortality rate of Dane County.
Right. Well, and then you and your wife braved Mayville to see the band or the play.
Come on, man. I'm vaxxed. I'm boosted. I'm feeling pretty good about life.
Good shape, yeah.
Well, I don't know about good shape, but I'm vaxxed and I'm boosted.
Yeah, did you have a couple glasses of wine up there?
No wine, lots of rum. Rum-dum-tum.